and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev.
How are you? Because as we were setting up today, we were having a little chat, and you're still not well, are you?
I'm not, no. This COVID thing is still very challenging at the moment. I think I might have what they call long COVID, but it's not fun.
Well, I hope you make it through to the end of the podcast. If at any moment you feel you need to take a bit of a time out, we could do that. You know, like a little time out, like doing some sports, or maybe like in tennis, where they, at the end of a set, they can have a 5-minute sit down or a bathroom break. If you feel at any point during the recording, just say, time out, Trev.
Well, it would be quite a sad indictment if I wasn't able to just sit here and gabble. But I mean, yeah, I'll do my best. I'll let you know.
You can barely manage it when you're well, Ben. Well, I hope you can get rid of this thing soon, because it's been lingering a long time. But I've still got this lingering cold thing. It's not quite as bad as you, but I'm going to cough and sputter, I think, all the way through this. We're two sickly old men is what we've turned into.
Awful, isn't it?
Do you find now, I've reached an age in my life where I've started to have conversations about health issues and ailments with my friends. We're not quite at that kind of older person age where you talk about all the medication you're on all the time and having constant doctor's appointments. But we've all got different aches and pains and twinges. I've got this thing at the moment where I don't know how I've done it. It's like a trapped nerve or something in my back. And I was talking to my mate the other day and he said, oh, I've got an issue with my back at the moment. You think, oh, what have we become? We're only mid-40s.
I know. Well, you've got 10 years on me, and I'm waking up with back issues because of my dodgy mattress, which I've just had to buy. By the way, what is going on with the cost of mattresses? What a racket that is for a piece of foam.
They're not just a piece of foam now, are they? If you watch all those adverts, they go, this is technology invented by NASA. Like, this is space-age mattresses we're getting now. It's not just a bit of foam.
It's utter rubbish. It is just a piece of foam, and they're tarting it up to make it sound like it's something really high tech. It's not. It's a piece of foam.
Oh, you're so cynical, Ben, for one.
You know, I'm cynical.
When you have to go and buy a mattress, there's that really weird thing where you have to lay on it, and because they ask you, there are different sort of levels of firmness, aren't there, in a mattress?
Yes.
So you kind of have to go around. And the last time I bought one, I think it was the first time I've ever bought a brand new mattress. I've always sort of, you know, had old ones, or I've been given an old mattress or something. Do you know what I mean? So it's the first time I've had to buy one myself. And I felt so awkward. The man says, we'll just lie on the different levels of firmness and see which one works for you. And it seems it's so weird in the middle of a shop lying down on a bed. I felt so self-conscious. You're supposed to lay on it for a certain amount of time, aren't you?
Yes. Well, with this one we've got coming in on Thursday, you're supposed to let it out of the packet and let it sort of rest for 24 hours.
Oh.
I mean, what precious little thing is this mattress? Like, do I have to ask permission before I can lie on it as well?
It needs to acclimatise to your house, probably.
Rubbish.
The sort of atmosphere of your house. Maybe it just needs to work out whether it wants to live in your house. Perhaps it's got the recall option if it spends 24 hours in your house and thinks, these aren't the people for me. And it sends a message back to Beds, Beds, Beds. And they send round like a little, it's like a little ambulance.
A SWAT team for
the mattress and break it out.
Maybe.
Abseil down the front of your house, smash through the windows and take the mattress back.
I'm almost tempted to let them have it back for the price it cost. It's ridiculous.
It's hundreds of pounds.
Higher than that. We're talking, without exaggeration, we're talking 4 weeks' wages for this new piece of foam.
But it's supposed to last you 8 years, so it's a good investment, really. If you suddenly get good sleep, you're not waking up with a bad back, Ben. It makes sense. It's a good investment.
Yes, it's like having to pay for the boiler to be fixed. It's something I can't stand spending money on. But, you know, you've got very little choice, have you?
You've got to do it. I think whenever you have to buy something for the first time that you've never bought, there's a level of naivety that you have to overcome. I remember the first time I went to buy my first sofa. Again, I'd always had second-hand sofas. I'd always been given stuff people were chucking out. I said, oh, that'll do me for a little while. And then I thought, no, I need to buy myself a new sofa. I couldn't believe the amount of money it was going to cost me. I wanted a 3-seater and a 2-seater. And in my head, I went thinking, well, that's going to be, what, 400 quid?
No,
it was over grand for the two of them. Over grand. Yeah. I can't believe it.
The other great thing with sofas is it's going to cost you $3,000 and you can have it in 5 months.
If you're lucky.
Oh, that's kind. Great. That's great. That's real customer service, that. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm really dragging the atmosphere of the podcast down because I'm in a terrible mood. I'll try and cheer it up a bit.
I mean, what you're sounding like, you're sounding like an old miser.
I was going to say Scrooge.
He's hunched up with his bad back over his table, counting his money. Yeah, I'm not going to buy a new mattress. Mrs. Bain, you can't have a new mattress.
It's on the way. As of Thursday, I'll be sleeping on a cloud, so I should be back to my normal chirpy self.
Yeah, so next week you'll be saying, oh, Trev, I feel so wonderful. It's like I've stepped on a marshmallow for the last few evenings. It's given me a whole new lease of life. It was well worth that $15,000 for the new NASA-inspired mattress. Has it got memory foam?
Yes, it is, but I specifically bought memory foam. This is the most boring conversation we've ever had. I specifically bought memory foam because I thought I'm not going to buy something with springs in it because the last one, the springs are all clearly knackered. So I thought, well, if I don't go down that route, then that can't be a problem I've got to deal with in the future. So we'll go with memory foam.
Any new listeners to the Trev and Ben podcasting, is this all they talk about?
Kind of.
It is, really, isn't it?
Mundane things like this, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've had a fascinating week, Ben.
It's been delightful.
I've spent a lot of my... I've become quite obsessed with something.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
I've become obsessed, very obsessed with Wordle.
I've heard of this.
I don't really know
what it is.
Well, I saw lots of people talking about it on social media and thinking, I don't know what this thing is. And they always put it like a grid up on Twitter. They'd show a little grid with different coloured squares. I was thinking, I don't know what this is. I'm not even going to look into what this is because it seems like it's going to be some terrible game like Candy Crush or something I'm not going to be interested in. Anyway,
correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that it's like a daily game where you get word of the day. You're given, as you say, a grid and a hint, maybe that they'll throw in a letter, and you've got to try in as few attempts as possible work out what the word is.
Well, you only get 6 attempts, and your first go, you just put a random 5-letter word in, and it tells you if you've got any letters right and if they're in the right position.
Okay.
And then you get 6 attempts to try and find the word of the day.
Right.
And once you start, it's quite addictive. I got so addicted because you only get one a day on the official Wordle thing. And I thought, that's not enough. I need a fix. I need more of a fix. So I found this thing called Wordle Unlimited.
Ooh.
Which means it's just one after another you can play. And honestly, the hours I have spent on Wordle this week is phenomenal. As soon as I finish work, as soon as I've done all my work, I just go to Wordle and I've spent hours just guessing 5-letter words. And it becomes so frustrating. Like sometimes you've got 3 of the letters in the right positions and you can't see what the word will be. And it's so annoying. And then you get to the end and you haven't worked it out and it pops up and it's so obvious and it's so frustrating. But it's so addictive, Ben.
I might have to give this a look. Am I right in thinking? Because I think I've heard someone complaining about Wordle once, saying that occasionally they'll have their entire day ruined when they couldn't get it, and it turns out it's because it was an Americanized spelling.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes that happens, Ben. And that, yes, that's a little bit frustrating. And what really started to, what did annoy me to start with is I wasn't very happy when they used a letter twice in the word. I thought they're all going to be 5-letter words, all different letters. Because the first time that came across, I didn't get it. And it came up, I don't know what the word was. It was like ruddy or something. Oh, you can't be using a letter twice because I've not been led to believe that this is the way the thing works. But sometimes that's thrown in.
What? So you're saying you could guess the letter D and it would only put one of them in?
Yes.
Oh, that's a bit tight.
I know. So there's a lot to think about, Ben. So it's quite a thing, and it has become quite the addiction. And I don't quite know where this is going to take me because there's all kinds of other ones now. I found another one the other day that is more than 5 letters. You can go up to as many letters as you want. And I thought, well, that's going to take up my life if I start getting into that, because 5 letter words is doing my head in at the moment.
Well, it sounds like you've got a new way to kill some time, which is all we're here to do, really, isn't it?
But it's good because you realise that your vocabulary is quite wide, because sometimes a word will come into your head because you look at the letters and you think, well, it could be that, and you're not quite sure where that word's come from.
Are they deliberately tricky words? Like, I don't know, for example, aisle, like A-I-S-L-E.
Could be. I mean, I think the best thing to do is to do one now.
Okay.
So I'm going to...
I've got a pen still from last week.
So I want you to give me a five-letter word. I have a few that I always start with. Do you want me to give you one of my normals that I start with?
No, I think I can manage a five-letter word.
So give me a five-letter word.
Horse.
Right, I'm putting horse in. This is our first guess. Now, I've never had one come up first time, by the way. That's the dream. I had one the other day where I was one letter out. Oh, that was a real knife in the heart.
I mean,
that
you are living on the edge, aren't you, Trev?
Right, I've put the word horse in. Okay, I tell you what, we've got O and R, but in the wrong positions. So now we need another five-letter word that has O and R in, but the O will not be the second letter and the R will not be the third letter.
Jesus, say that again.
It's easier if you see this. It's very difficult for me to keep explaining. So we need a, this is such poor audio, it's a poor audio idea. But so we need another five-letter word, O and R in it, but O will not be the second letter, and R is not the third letter.
Okay. Round. Oh, no, that falls down with the O being the second letter, doesn't it?
Yes. This is what it does to you. This is what it does to you.
Oh, grief. I can't do it, mate. I can't think of a single word.
It's difficult. Okay, I've got one that we could try.
Okay.
This is using one letter twice. I'm going to put trout in.
Okay, that'll work. That's within the rules.
So we've got R and O in the right place now. Second letter is an R.
Right, we're getting somewhere.
Third letter is an O.
Okay. But the other letters
are
out.
Okay. So T, U, and T are out.
Can I offer up the word drown? D-R-O-W-N.
Oh, that's a good one. D-R-O-W-N. I can sense you're getting into this now.
I am.
Now this is where it gets exciting, because we've got D and N, but they're in the wrong positions.
Ooh.
So we know that we've got four of the letters. We've got R and O in the right place, but D and N in the wrong place. It's not going to start with N.
No, it can't start. No. N R isn't the beginning of any word.
So it's going to be R O N D.
R O N D. Well, we should be able to work this out.
I know, but this is what. Rond. Crond.
What the hell is that? Something R O N D.
I can't see how. This is where you have to start putting in words that you see whether they're actually words, because it might be an obscure word.
Well, I think you've given me a duff one.
No, I haven't given you a duff. I'm just telling you what's coming up here. So, shall we try crond? That might be a word.
That's not a word.
Well, no, you just don't know. It's not a word. It's not a word. You're absolutely right.
Did we at least get the confirmation on the ND being in the right place?
No. If the word does exist, it doesn't help you. If you get the word that doesn't exist, it sort of shakes at you angrily.
Oh.
It sort of shakes the word as if to say, don't be so stupid. So look at the letters we've got left that we could use. Arond. No,
frond. Not a word.
Grond.
Not a word.
Crond.
We just tried crond, didn't we?
I'm using a K this time.
Oh, right, that was my fault.
I'm using a kicking K rather than a curly K.
If you don't manage to get it within the guess limit,
It will tell you.
It won't leave you hanging. That's good.
Yeah. Arond. Would Arond be a word? I'm going to put Arond in.
I mean, errand is a word, but it's not spelled like this.
It's not spelled like that, is it? Prond. Prond be a word.
Again, not as far as I'm aware.
No, it's not.
I'm not convinced we've got the N and the D the right way around, but I'm not sure how else it could possibly go.
Well, there's nowhere else for it to go.
It could be D-R-O, couldn't it?
No, we've got D in the first position at the moment, and it's not in the right position.
This is a nightmare.
What I find you have to do sometimes is put in, you almost have to sacrifice a turn just to make sure you've got things in the right place.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if we think of another word that ends O-N-D, even if it's the second word's not, like any word that ends O-N-D.
Sound.
Right, I'm going to put sound in. We know that the S is...
No, that's wrong. That's not how you spell sound either, is it?
No, it's not. You're absolutely right. Let's just think of a word that ends N-D, just to make sure that N-D are the final two letters.
Well, then you can do sound for that.
Right, so I'm going to put sound in. Then we can just confirm that we've got those two in the right place. which we have. So it's R-O something, R-O-N-D.
I can't think of a single word in the English language that would fit that criteria.
This is what does my head in when you're doing this. Sometimes it's really easy, and sometimes I cannot see a word here that exists in the English language that is something R-O-N-D. And it's probably really obvious.
Well, there's two of us thinking about this.
I'm putting in grond. That's not a word.
Have you tried errand with an E? I know it's.
Well,
I know it's not the way
we've used an E and it's not in there. So we know an E doesn't exist in this word. What about vrond?
Not a word.
Well, I'm just clutching at straws here.
And you've tried G, have you? Grond.
I'm going to put grond in. I might have tried it. I'm going to try it again. Not a word. It's shaking angrily at me. Frond. I'm just trying to.
This must be the worst podcast.
Frond is the word. It's just come up. Frond. I don't even know what frond is.
Right, that is not a word. That is specifically... I'm going to Google it myself.
I'm looking
F-R-O-N-D.
Up what frond means now. That's definition. One of the hardest ones I've ever done. It's a leaf or leaf-like part of a palm fern or similar part. Frond. Well, this is the good thing. You've now got that word in your vocabulary.
That is... You have just done this game such a disservice with that example of it. It's awful. I'm never playing it ever again.
I'll tell you how else I've been spending my time this week, Ben. I think you'll be fascinated. I think this might go down better than Wordle went down.
Wouldn't be hard.
I ended up reading about weird plots, particularly from the Cold War.
Okay, that's very niche.
Well, no, I know, but these are just so out there. Right, the first one, I think this will get you interested. If I just say two words to you, I think suddenly you will be interested, even if at the very heart of it you're thinking, this is just going to be dull, Trev. But if I just said the words to you, bomber bears...
I'm listening.
So, apparently, there was... it was called a Convair B-58 Hustler, which was a high-altitude bomber designed to carry up to 5 nuclear bombs at speeds of over 1,000 miles per hour, right?
Right.
And they were designed to outfly Soviet fighter planes in the early 60s. But the problem was it needed an advanced ejection seat to allow crews to bail out at supersonic speeds. Now, they weren't sure whether that was going to be safe or not.
Right.
So to start with, the American government thought they could recruit the unemployed to work as crash test dummies.
Yeah.
You've got to be pretty desperate for work, I reckon, if you're going to take that on.
I mean, could you possibly survive that? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. So what they ended up doing was they drugged up bears and stuck the bears in.
This seems rather cruel.
I know. Heavily medicated bears were loaded into the bomber's crew compartment and fitted with an array of sensors before being ejected from the planes at high speed.
So this was merely to test the ejector seat?
Yes.
Right.
Now, most of the bears survived. That's the extraordinary thing. Only one of the bear bomber pilots is known to have died, which was put down to an undiagnosed brain condition. Nothing to do with the... Well, it was to do with the ejection because it couldn't withstand the strain of it, but it wasn't killed outright by the ejection process itself.
But your average bear is going to be considerably heavier than a human being, isn't it?
I would guess so, yes. Unless they've picked bears, specifically younger bears who aren't... Because, I mean, it'd be quite hard to get a full-size, like, black bear or brown bear into a cockpit of a plane, wouldn't it?
You also wonder why the plane has to be in the air to test the ejector seat.
I don't know if they were in the air. They might not have been in the air. But presumably they would have had to have had a parachute on as well. I'm imagining that the bear had to be parachuted back to Earth once it's ejected.
It sounds a very bizarre solution to come to, but interesting. I'll give
but
you that.
But they did it. I mean, that's the thing that blows my mind. It is quite cruel. I mean, you wouldn't advocate that these days, would you? If somebody said to you now, even if like you're in the middle of a war, as part of Europe is now, you wouldn't say, well, we need to be investigating some new weaponry. We need to test them or let's put some bears, let's drug up some bears and put them in a plane and fire them out at supersonic speeds.
No, I think you'd have all sorts of organisations like PETA and all kinds of problems, but yeah, would be all over you.
But animals were used a lot. Spy cats were an idea.
Right, I'm assuming they're just attaching cameras to cats.
No, they'd put a, not just, not a camera, no. They'd have a microphone put into the cat's ear so that it could record and send back what's being said in certain private meetings.
How many private meetings are taking place with just cats wandering in?
I don't know. But presumably no one's going to question it if a cat walks in. I mean, perhaps if they'd had that in the Second World War, you could have put a cat into Hitler's bunker. Would he have questioned it? I think he was an animal lover himself, Hitler.
I think he was.
He might have picked that cat up and told it his secrets to the cat.
Yeah, be a bit of a strange way to lose a war, wouldn't it? By divulging your tactics to a cat.
But what a hero the cat would be.
Yeah.
Nuclear chickens.
Nuclear chickens. yeah, that's going to take some explaining too.
Well, again, this is an extraordinary idea. It was called Project Blue Peacock, and it called for 10 huge nuclear landmines to be buried in Germany to be set off if a Soviet armoured division was coming towards Europe. And the idea was that, these were huge mines as well. They were about half as powerful as the bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki. So these were huge nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
The idea was they could be detonated remotely by the British Army, but there were concerns that the, bearing in mind this is the mid-1950s, that the electronics of the detonator might not stand up to the cold German winters. So they came up with this idea that they would put a live chicken into a special compartment inside the mine. And the thinking would be that the chicken would generate enough body heat to ensure the bomb remained operational.
Okay.
They would put seed in, which would obviously keep the chicken alive for a while. And this is the weirdest thing. They think that by putting seed in, it would stop the chicken from pecking at the wiring. I still think that there'd be room for error here.
Yeah.
Chickens peck at anything.
If you were my top military strategy guy and you came to me with this idea,
yeah,
I would be asking some serious questions about, you know, is this really the best guy for the job? This, you know, the
have
guy
you been
with
taking some of the drugs meant for the bears? Is a question I would ask.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a very convincing idea. But
and also, each
did
chicken,
it work?
Well, they didn't do it. It was only an idea.
Oh, okay.
And they reckoned each chicken would only last about a week. So you'd have to go and be replacing the chickens on a weekly basis, which would sort of... You'd be getting through a lot of chickens. What would you do?
You would be.
Would you eat the chickens after that if it's been that close to a nuclear bomb?
I wouldn't, personally. But, the guy who came up with this theory might. He sounds mad enough.
Other animal ones, not necessarily the Cold War, but... exploding rats.
Now, this sounds familiar.
This was during World War II. The British Special Operations Executive came up with this idea. It was a rat bomb. So they weren't live rats. These were rat carcasses filled with plastic explosives. And the idea was to distribute them near German boiler rooms where it was expected they would be disposed of by burning. And then the subsequent explosion would cause the boiler to explode. The explosive rats never saw use, though. The first shipment was intercepted by the Germans.
Oh. Well, I'm sure I remember something about that. Did they do something with bats once in a war? Something about starting fires by bats?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to look that one up.
I may have made that up.
Yeah, it sounds like you've made it up, but then I could be telling you a lot of these and it would sound like I've made them up.
Yeah, you might be... doing this as a massive practical joke to sort of say, look how stupid Ben is. I can tell him about bears in ejector seats and he'll believe me.
I'm just looking this up. I'm only having a very... Oh, hang on. What we got here? Bat bomb tests go awry. This is a headline from 1943. Well, no, you're definitely into something here.
Good.
This was... the plan was to use small incendiary bombs attached to bats as a method to firebomb Japan.
There you go.
The idea to use bats as a way to deliver small fire-starting bombs was proposed in about 1941, I think.
I don't know how successful it was or if it ever was deployed, but I think it was definitely a thing.
It was seen they did a lot of tests on it, but I don't think it was ever used in the on the battlefield, as it were.
I'll tell you another really strange military tactic that was used once, which was the famous Trojan horse.
Oh, the Trojan horse, yes.
Now, did that ever actually happen, or is that a bit of a myth?
Well, I'd love to believe it happened. I would love to believe it happened. But I think now the thinking is that it was definitely a myth. It was something that was it was something.
They'd have to be pretty dumb to think, oh well, you know, that army who've been laying siege to us for months, that they've all cleared off, but what they've done is they've left an enormous wooden horse here for us. That's lovely of them, isn't it? Let's just wheel it in and ask no further questions as to why this has happened. That'd be quite stupid, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was something about the horse being a gift to the gods, wasn't it? So they were going to, so they wouldn't have thought that it was filled with soldiers who would come out and slaughter them.
Hmm. So I never really got to the bottom if that was like a metaphor or a myth, or if
I think
it just
it's a myth.
Happens.
I mean, I have also read that there are lots of ideas that, although they called it a wooden horse, it might have been a boat that came in with soldiers full of people. So I don't think anyone's quite sure of the truth of it, but I think the consensus these days, it was a myth. I think when you start looking into stuff about sort of ancient Greece, there's lots of stuff that I think you'd like to believe. I mean, for years, I thought the whole Achilles story was true. You know,
is it not?
Well, I read fairly recently that they're not even sure there was anyone ever called Achilles.
Oh.
They might not have even existed. It was just a story that was made up, just a tale that was told.
Oh,
that's I'd like to think that was real. Yeah, I know, these sorts of things. But, I mean, the Trojan horse, I mean, that would be, if you could make that work, what a genius move that is.
Well, is it genius? I still think falling for that's fairly stupid. So does it take genius to fool stupid people?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I suppose if you know that for them a big wooden horse would be seen as a gift to the gods, then you'd do it, wouldn't you? And you would you'd see them wheel it in past their gates and then wait for it to happen. You'd think, wow, we've thought this one through. We've literally found their Achilles heel and a gift to the gods that's a wooden horse.
Yeah, I'd still, you know, check it first, make sure it's all, you know, kosher, but obviously not, you know, they didn't bother with that, so that's fine.
Yeah.
But I just really think that was quite a glaring oversight there. Someone needs to be sacked for that.
The general of the army that allowed it in, you'd have to ask questions.
You would.
Surely, wouldn't you? Did you ever hear about the, you know, Fidel Castro?
I don't know much about him, but yes.
So he was the Cuban leader for many years.
Yes.
And there were loads of things that the CIA, because they wanted to get rid of him, really. They tried all kinds of ideas to try and just undermine him or maybe even assassinate him. They had one idea where they wanted to make his beard fall out.
Okay. How were they going to achieve that?
They were going to use a toxic chemical element called thallium.
Okay.
And I think the idea was to sprinkle it into his shoes when he was on an overseas trip, and then it would be absorbed through his skin, causing him to lose his beard and therefore rob him of his machismo.
Right. I mean, have you ever heard the tale in the Bible of Samson, who had his hair cut off and he lost all his powers? I'm not sure that's exactly how that works.
Well, the thing is, maybe his beard did hold some powers. The whole communist ideal of Cuba may have been held within his beard.
It's a lot of effort to go to make somebody feel a bit stupid for a minute, isn't it?
Yeah, but maybe his people saw that beard as a symbol of power, and perhaps if that beard wasn't there, they may have wanted to overthrow him. Perhaps the downfall of communism in Cuba may have occurred.
I'd have just thought, if you could get that close to him that you could get poisonous chemicals in him, in his system, and you want him removed, why stop at the beard? Why not just kill him? I mean, Just you'd rather make him look a bit silly. That won't solve the problem. That'll just annoy him.
They did have an idea once of getting an exploding cigar to him to assassinate him.
What, like one of those ones you see in cartoons?
yeah. That's it. Get an exploding cigar, send it to him. Obviously, it'll be a Cuban cigar, and blow him up again. Never worked. Didn't get it to him. But these are extraordinary things that you just don't think happens. I'm sure I remember hearing once, just going back to animals, was there something like a dog being used? The idea was to have a dog with explosives in, I remember hearing once.
I don't know about dogs. I think I've heard of dolphins used to place mines on ships or something.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a myth.
I don't know. You can't trust anything anymore.
We're going to have to look that up now.
Well, because how can we live in a world where we can be ejecting bears out of passenger seats, but the idea of a dolphin doing something with a mine is ridiculous? You sort of lose your barometer of what's true anymore.
Well, I've just looked this up. War dolphins has come up when you search it.
Good. Not good that they were used, but just good that I'm not talking nonsense again.
Well, this is going back to 2016. This is the first article I found. And it says, earlier this month, the Russian government announced it was looking to buy 5 combat dolphins.
Right, combat dolphins.
Combat dolphins.
Is that different to a regular dolphin?
It just says they have to be physically unblemished and in possession of perfect teeth.
Right, okay.
Russia at the time didn't reveal what it planned to do with the dolphins, of course. But there is a story that America started using war dolphins in around 1960.
Really?
It says that they were taught to find underwater mines and learn to flag the presence of enemy swimmers.
So they weren't placing the mines.
Doesn't
they were
look like it. Doesn't
an
look
alert
like
system.
It.
Okay.
No. I mean, this is. Have you seen the rats that they use in, I forget which country it is, to sniff out landmines?
I have heard of this, yes.
It's extraordinary. They train these rats. I believe one of them died recently. I remember seeing that one of the landmine rats had passed away, but they trained them to sniff out the landmines, and they found sort of hundreds of these things and probably saved hundreds of lives.
Oh, well, that's good.
It is good. It's incredible. I'll just give you a couple more animal ones, because they use animals so often. From rats to gerbils, MI5 pioneered the idea of using sniffer gerbils to smell fear by detecting the scent of adrenaline during interrogations.
Oh, I didn't know adrenaline had a scent.
Yeah, and then in Israel, they put gerbils at airports, and I suppose the idea was that they would sniff out terrorists, and they were assisted by huge fans that would blow the smell of passengers at the gerbils.
Really? That's strange.
But unfortunately, because there are quite a large number of people who are afraid of flying, the adrenaline scent is quite strong from a lot of people at airports. So it's very difficult to work out who might be a terrorist and who's someone who's just terrified of flying.
And it's really fascinating, isn't it?
The final one I'll give you, because this is just incredible. Pigeons. Now, we all know pigeons have been used for delivering messages in many times. Well, an American scientist tried to develop a pigeon-guided missile.
Right.
The control system involved a lens projecting an image of the target to a screen inside, while pigeons were trained to recognize the target and pecked at it.
And did that work?
Well, although skeptical of the idea, the National Defense Research Committee spent thousands of dollars to do the research, but unfortunately, the missiles didn't really fly straight during the training process. So I don't think it came to anything.
Oh.
Sadly, there was no chance of a military coup.
Oh, very good.
Just because they've gone down so well the last couple of weeks, Ben, do you fancy another connections quiz?
Yeah, let's do it.
I had a message about last week's, because we didn't do particularly well, though you did get the connection.
Just right in the nick of time. Yeah.
But I got a message last week to say that it was Chris who got in touch with us, said they got it very early on.
Really?
Well, Chris, let's see how you do this week. Let us know how you get on. Yeah, do let us know. Right. So we've got 9 questions, and then we've got to find what connects them.
Okay, let's do it.
Have you got your pen and paper handy, Ben?
I am at the ready.
Okay. Question number one. In 1920, Which international organisation was formed to prevent wars? Would it be the United Nations?
I'll write it down.
It's not NATO, because I think NATO was after the Second World War, but maybe the United... Or was it the League of Nations? There was a thing called the League of Nations, I remember from history. It might be the League of Nations, you know, because then I think that went on to become the United Nations.
I've put United/League of Nations.
Brilliant. Excellent. Right, question number two. Who starred as the lawyer Atticus Finch in the film To Kill a Mockingbird?
I mean, it's a very old film.
It was... Is it Gregory Peck? I think it's Gregory Peck.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
I think so. Right, question number three. Oh, this is right up our street. What name is given in knitting to a pattern of stitches producing a pattern like a twisted rope? Now, obviously, you do a lot of knitting, Ben. I know
you can't bump into me in the street without me needles out.
yeah, but normally you're just shooting up.
I don't know. Do you know?
No idea. All I know about knitting is knit one, pearl one. So okay. It could be a pearl.
We should probably bypass that one. I'll put down pearl, but...
Okay, all right. Question number four. Who in 1705 became the second scientist ever to be knighted 102 years after the first? 1705.
Well, this isn't going well, is it?
My instinct on that would be Isaac Newton.
Is it the right time?
I don't know. I don't know if it's the
right
time.
I've written it down.
I can't think of anyone else it could be. It would have to be an English scientist, wouldn't it?
I guess so, yeah.
Let's go with Newton for now.
Okay.
Okay, number five. According to the Bible, on what medium were the Ten Commandments written?
They were written on stone tablets, weren't they?
Stone tablets, yeah. So stone, I suppose.
I'll write it all down, but I'm not confident with this, I must be honest.
Question number six. What is the American word for the back garden? Yard, isn't it? Your backyard.
Yes.
They don't have another word for it, do they?
I don't think so. I think it is yard.
Yard. Let's go with yard.
Okay.
Very happy with that. Question number seven. In 1901, Annie Edson Taylor... Oh, you've heard of her, surely. Annie Edson Taylor was the first person to successfully go over the Niagara Falls in what unconventional vessel?
Was it a barrel?
Well, they often went over in barrels, didn't they? I don't know how many people survived, but maybe she was the first to survive in a barrel.
Okay, I've
been
down.
To Niagara Falls. I'd have thought that was something they would have told me about, but I can't remember.
I'm sure I've heard of people going over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
It's so powerful, the falls. It's extraordinary that anyone would survive anything going over that.
Although, if tons of people have done it, then it can't really be considered unconventional.
Well, she was the first, though.
Oh, she was the first, was she?
Yeah, okay. It was the first to successfully go over. Presumably people had tried to go over the falls in a barrel before.
Was it a punishment, or was it...
I don't think it was a punishment. It was like a feat, wasn't it? A sort of human feat of power, I suppose. Power over nature.
Am I making this up? But I have a memory that she may not have been all that thrilled about doing it. Like, it might have been a punishment. And also, I have a very strange suspicion. She had a cat with her.
A cat with her?
I may be making all of that up, but it's in my brain.
I wonder if she drug the cat up. Because it'd be very difficult to, A, get a cat in a barrel, for a start.
Yeah.
Like, once you're in the water, the cat ain't getting out, is it?
Well, no, there's not much it can do about it once it's in there, is it?
No. I wonder if the cat survived.
Did she survive?
Well, it says successfully.
So
I'm assuming she survived. Doesn't say anything about the cat. I'll tell you what, when we get to the answer, I'm going to look her up and see whether she took a cat with her.
Okay, good.
Right. Question number eight. Maggie May was the first number one for which singer?
Rod Stewart.
Question number nine. What name is given to a smoker continually lighting one cigarette from the previous one?
Chain smoker.
Right.
So there's definitely a thing here. Is that all of the questions?
That's all the questions. So what have we got?
We've got chain, rod, barrel, yard. There's a definite theme here.
Right.
I don't know how League of Nations fits in, but...
they're all measurements. They're all measurements of things.
Stone tablets.
Stone.
Isaac Newton isn't a measurement,
Newton's,
is it?
Newton's is a...
Oh, yes, you're all
measurement.
Right.
So what have we got?
Gregory Peck?
Yeah, that's the only one, isn't it? Pecks.
That doesn't fit.
Would you get pecks? It's six pecs. Seven pecs is what it is.
Don't think so. So we're going with measurements.
I think so, because we've got league. Because you've got 20, you know, that, what's that thing? 20,000 leagues under the sea. So league must be a measurement.
Right. I'm not as convinced, but it does seem to be largely correct. But there's a few I'd say don't work.
Right. So what ones didn't we get? We didn't get the knitting one.
We put a, yeah, the knitting one where you said pearl, which yeah,
that can't
no
be right.
sense.
If it's a measurement, it could be like a, oh, I don't know.
We probably shouldn't guess because we've got no idea.
Right, should we check the answers?
All right, we're committing to measurements.
Right, answer number one, League of Nations.
Good.
Question number two, Gregory Peck.
We're doing well.
So I reckon Peck must be a, or Gregory's. I wonder if, Gregory's, I wonder how many Gregory's it take. How many Gregory's is my room I'm in at the moment? I would say it's 31 Gregory's.
I did, when his name came up, I did start to worry if it might be rhyming slang.
Oh, what, Gregory Peck? Neck.
Neck, yeah.
Oh, but the others don't fit. Really,
no,
do
they don't.
Gregory's. Oh, Gregory's. Number three, Cable. That's the knitting one.
Okay. Again, not really a measurement, is it, Cable?
Well, it might be.
Just the word
It just
cable.
Might be measurements we don't know, because some of these might be old measurements.
Okay.
Like a chain is a measurement, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
Something to do with cricket, isn't it? Isn't the length of a cricket pitch a certain number of chains?
I don't know. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I think so. I think a chain is like, because what's a cricket pitch? Is it 22 feet? So anyway, that doesn't matter. Question number four, Isaac Newton.
Oh, that's good. Well done.
Number five, stone tablets.
Yep.
Number six, yard.
Good.
Number seven, barrel.
Nice.
Number eight, Rod Stewart.
Very good. Be chain.
Chain smoker. So we're going with measurements.
I think so.
Right. All terms of measurement.
Hey.
Well, we did all right there. Now, before we finish up, I've got to look up, what was her name?
Annie I can't
Edson
remember.
Taylor.
Niagara Falls cat barrel. That'll do you, Google.
But I mean, she was 63 when she did this, by the way.
Really?
She wasn't like a young woman thinking, right, you know, she was a pensionable age to do this.
Wow.
Right, I'm looking at, I'm going to search for the word cat. She did, you right. She took a...
Really?
Oh, no, hang on. No, she didn't take a cat with her. 2 days before she tried, they sent over a cat in her barrel to test its strength. To see
I knew there was some truth to what I was saying. This is incredible. This is like the third time in this podcast I've come up with something outlandish, and they've all turned out to be true.
So contrary to rumours at the time, the cat survived the plunge, and 17 minutes later, after she was found with a bleeding head, posed with Taylor in photographs.
Oh, poor thing.
Poor little thing. Why, if you just want to test the strength of the barrel, why put a cat in it?
That doesn't prove anything, because a human's substantially heavier than a cat, so you're not going to learn anything.
And if the barrel... Just send the barrel over. If the barrel was going to survive, then you probably survive. That's. I think that's bang out of order to send the poor little cat over the thing.
I agree.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. I've got one recommendation for you this week, Ben.
What have we got?
It's on Sky Atlantic at the moment, so it's on catch-up. The first four episodes are out. I think there's eight in total. It's called Julia. Now, I have to be honest with you, it's not the sort of thing I would normally go for to watch. But I looked at the trailer and I thought, this is quite good. It's the true story of an American lady called Julia Child, who became... a TV chef in America in the, I think, the 60s.
Yes, I've heard of her,
Have you heard of her?
I have.
It's basically her story of how she came to get her first bit on telly and then wanted to get her own show. And it's a really nice drama. It's done with a lot of comedy in it. It stars Sarah Lancashire as Julia Child. But I tell you what really caught my imagination when I saw it was there's a little bit of a Frasier reunion in this show.
Oh, really?
David Hyde Pierce is in it.
Okay. Well, I watch him in anything, so...
He plays Julia Child's husband.
Right.
And the actress who played Lilith is in it.
Oh, okay.
Whose name I couldn't remember. I've had to look it up. B.B. Newworth.
Yes, that sounds right.
So they're both in it. It's a really weird thing, because also you forget, because I watch a lot of Frasier, and I know you do, but you forget that that's quite an old thing now. and you look at them and you think, blimey, they look old. But of course, Frasier's not been on for 20 years.
They've been promising a Frasier reboot for a long time, but it's not coming yet. I don't know what's going on.
I did look it up a couple of weeks ago, actually, because I was beginning to wonder what was happening with it. I've got a feeling, it's one of those things, I've just got a feeling it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it'd be a shame.
And I don't think... I'm not sure there's an appetite for it from some of the other cast members. So I think if it happened, it would be... I don't think you'd get many of the old cast in it.
Oh, that's a shame. I'd have enjoyed that. I do have actually one recommendation which I slipped my mind until now. I believe on the 20th of April, so when this podcast should come out, I believe, will be the newest series of Inside Number 9.
Oh, yes. I saw that advertised. That's good.
Which is always good.
And the other thing just to mention is the new Taskmaster started last week.
Excellent.
I haven't watched it yet, but looking forward to that. So there we are. A few things for you to get your little goggly eyes on. And that's it from us. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.